take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Monday, October 18th, 2010, 2 weeks and 1 day away from legalization, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for our little show, 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, and joining us from our virtual studios in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Welcome back from the smokeout, Russ. Did you get smoked out?
Oh, we got quite smoked out at the smokeout, and I got to give big thanks to Rolla J and NorCal Kid, who drove down from Northern California to join me at the smokeout. Without them, it wouldn't have been as smoky. So thank you so much, you guys, for coming on down and having a good time. How was your weekend, Carrie?
Oh, my weekend was great. I got to go to a debate on Major 74 that sort of turned into a forum because there really wasn't anybody on the against side except for the district attorney. It was pretty funny.
Was that the Josh Marquis event with Lee Berger?
It was, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it went great.
Did you get any recordings of that by any chance?
I did record a little bit of it. Maybe I'll try to chop it up a little bit later today and zip you some in an MP3.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Carrie, by the way, brings us our news headlines right after the first break. So what do we have on tap today?
Well, if we can get to all three stories today, maybe we'll just do two. I do want to talk about Sheriff Lee Baca shooting his mouth off last Friday. Also, a new donor has stepped up to be behind Proposition 19. And unfortunately, another education in DARE. That's right. The drug program for children that is highly ineffective.
Okay. We'll take a look at that right after our first break. Also coming up on today's show at 20 after, we always do our daily toker tunes. Today is Roots Monday, and Carrie will be bringing us some great tunes. Sweet Northern California is the name of the tune. I'm looking forward to that. And then at half past the hour, a special cannabis conversation. I was at the Cypress Hill Smokeout this weekend because I was the moderator for a panel on Prop 19 that featured Senator Mike Gravel, Governor Gary Johnson, Prop 19 spokesperson Jeff Jones, David Bienenstock, the West Coast editor of High Times Magazine, Todd McCormick from Empire Media, and LA's dopest attorney, Allison Margolin. It was an amazing panel, and I'm going to give it to you in two parts. We'll do part one today at half past the hour, and then tomorrow we'll do part two of this exciting Prop 19 presentation. I'm sure you'll really enjoy it. And then for those of you who are sticking around live, you'll get to hear Toker Talk Radio in hour two. I'm going to take you through some of the photographs from the Cypress Hill Smokeout. Maybe we'll get Rolla J and NorCal on the line to talk about it a little bit as well. And of course, we take your questions and comments at our live line for those of you who are listening on Stick'em.com. Thanks so much for joining us here at Normal Show Live. We'll be right back after these messages. Please stick around. Tell your friends. Check us out on our blog at stash.normal.org. Follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ. Carrie is at Cannabis Carrie, K-A-R-R-I. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind, liberate your mind, liberate your mind, that's what you got to do.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carrie.
Los Angeles County Sheriff Luke Baca held a news conference on Friday to let the voters of Los Angeles know that he and his deputies will continue to enforce the current marijuana laws, even if Proposition 19 passes. He also adds that he doesn't think that it will pass. He used a letter sent to 9 former chiefs of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration by Attorney General Eric Holder last week to strengthen his claims. Attorney General Holder's letter went public the day after it was sent, and in it he vowed to vigorously enforce drug laws when it came to recreational use of marijuana, regardless of the outcome of Prop 19. Sheriff Baca was joined by Los Angeles County District Attorney Steve Cooley, who is also a candidate for California's Attorney General. When asked if he had ever tried marijuana, Lee Baca answered an unequivocal hell no, unquote. He said that legalizing marijuana would increase the cost of drug rehabilitation, cause traffic accidents, and force employers to battle with employees getting high on the job. He also claimed that legalizing marijuana would provide a safe cover for drug cartels selling harder narcotics. He said that Californians using less than an ounce in their homes were already a non-priority for his department, but said that they would continue to target dealers. He said that local law enforcement agencies should go by federal drug laws that prohibit cannabis. On the chance that Prop 19 does pass, he reiterated that it would have no effect whatsoever on what his department does.
Well, folks, listen to me out there. Raise your hands if you've ever heard a cop or a law enforcement person say, "We don't make the laws, we just enforce them." Well, that's right. And you know who makes the laws, Sheriff Baca? The people make the laws, and you just enforce them. You don't get to pick and choose which laws you want to enforce just because you personally don't like the outcome of a signature initiative here. And furthermore, when it comes to enforcing federal drug laws, this has already been solved. The Supreme Courts of California have decided that with respect to Prop 215, that police are in charge of enforcing state law and local law, not federal law. While there is a dual jurisdiction with regard to federal and state law, enforcing the federal law is the job of the federal cops, not the local cops. And in fact, Sheriff Baca, if you go forward with this and prosecute people who are doing lawful activities under Prop 19 when it passes, you yourself will be opened up to lawsuits. For Prop 19 has language in it that specifically forbids state and local law enforcement from seizing, threatening to seize, or attempting to seize any lawfully produced cannabis in the state of California. So, Sheriff Baca, it's time you start learning the law a little bit better and understanding that the people are serious about this. We do not want you wasting any more of our precious resources going after cannabis consumers and ganja gardeners. The point here would also be that we see violent crime in this country severely under-arrested and under-prosecuted. Only the clearance rate for violent crimes in the United States used to be about 90% back in the 1960s. This meant if they caught and arrested someone for a violent crime, 90% of the time they're able to get a guilty conviction and put that person behind bars. In the case now, after all of our drug laws, we are seeing rates around 60% for clearances of violent crime. Stop busting potheads and put that time toward busting rapists, murderers, and thieves.
a retired insurance company executive from Florida who has close ties with the Marijuana Policy Project, has donated $209,005 to the campaign to legalize marijuana in the state of California. Peter Lewis, a billionaire philanthropist who built up Progressive Insurance into one of the nation's largest auto insurers, is not new to the cannabis law reform initiative in California. In 1996, Lewis donated $500,000 to Prop 215, the measure that made California the first state in the nation to legalize medical marijuana. In 2000, he donated over $1 million to Proposition 36 to allow nonviolent drug offenders to spend time in treatment centers rather than concrete boxes for their crimes. There has been some speculation that Lewis hadn't come out earlier to support this measure financially because he wanted to wait and support a legalization effort in 2012, a presidential election that would likely attract more voters and therefore have a better shot at passing. His donation makes him the largest single contributor to the effort after the bill's sponsor, Richard Lee. Richard Lee has spent more than $1.5 million in his effort to get Proposition 19 on the ballot and to campaign for its passage. Lewis said in a statement on Saturday, quote, "I admire the effort, energy, and commitment of the people involved in this campaign, and I want to help them get their message out to voters." The Public Policy Institute of California showed the initiative polling at 52%. Meanwhile, the No on 19 campaign has not had the same kind of luck with big donors in their efforts in this last stretch of campaigning before November 2nd. So far this month, the largest donation reported to the No on 19 campaign is $25,000 from the chairman of Santa Ana-based Gemini Industries, Sebastian Musco.
Well, 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 let's see. How do I frame this story? I mean, on the one hand, it's great, great that Peter Lewis has stepped forward with, what, was it over $200,000, Gary?
$209,005. I have no idea where the $5
and five. Okay. It's great that he stepped up with over $200,000 in support. So I guess, you know, that's good news on that side. But looking at it from another perspective, it's 15 days before Election Day. I mean, come on now. Could have jumped on this this bandwagon a little sooner, don't you think, Peter? But, you know, this gets into all sorts of politics and all sorts of things. You know, Carrie mentioned in the story that Peter Lewis and, of course, the group that he primarily funds, Marijuana Policy Project, wanted to wait until 2012. And we got a similar response from the Drug Policy Alliance wanting to wait till 2012. And there was an argument to be made for that back when we were discussing this, you know, whether or not this was going to get on the ballot. There was an argument to be made because, indeed, when we talk about midterm elections, usually it's got lower turnout, more of your older, more conservative voters usually turn out for those elections, and the people who are opposed to marijuana legalization are the older, more conservative voters. The popular thought was, well, let's wait till 2012. A presidential election brings out younger voters. Younger voters more overwhelmingly support legalization. It would be a better use of time and money to do that. But that was an argument for last year. That was an argument for way before this got on the ballot. Once it made the ballot, every drug organization out there, all of the drug reform organizations with money out there, should have jumped on it the minute it hit the ballot. Right? Once it hits the ballot, we're all on the same side and we've all got to pass these marijuana laws. I call on all the large-scale donors and organizers here to take your ego out of it. Take out the fact that it isn't proposed by one of the big organizations and it didn't come from the standard groups that write these sort of things. It doesn't matter. It's legalization. It's on the ballot. We've all got to get behind it and give all the time and the money we can to get this thing passed.
And unfortunately, last week it happened again. The day after a lesson about marijuana was given to fifth graders at an elementary school in Matthews, North Carolina, an 11-year-old student brought his parents' marijuana to school to give to a DARE officer and report them. Now, DARE stands for Drug Abuse Resistant Education and is an international education program aimed at children. The program that began in 1983 in California has students sign a pledge not to use drugs or join gangs. The interactive in-school curriculum lasts 10 weeks and is taught by a trained police officer in full uniform. DARE has been criticized because follow-up studies have proven it to be ineffective at best. Scientific evaluation studies have consistently shown that DARE is ineffective in reducing the use of alcohol and drugs and is sometimes even counterproductive, worse than doing nothing. That's the conclusion of the U.S. General Accounting Office, the U.S. Surgeon General, and the National Academy of Sciences. DARE is being implemented in 80% of the United States school districts and in more than 43 countries around the world. Now, in the North Carolina case, a spokesman for the Matthews Police Department, Officer Stason Tyrell, said about the incident, quote, "Even if it's happening in their own home with their own parents, they understand that's a dangerous situation because of what we're teaching them. That's what they're told to do to make us aware," unquote. Police arrested the child's 40-year-old father and 38-year-old mother on Thursday. Both were charged with two misdemeanor counts, each of marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. They were both released after the arrest and given a date to appear in court. In response to media reporters waiting for him outside of his house, the father told them point blank, quote, "I don't give drugs to my kids," unquote. When asked where his child got a hold of the marijuana, he replied, "That's no one's business." The 11-year-old child that turned in his parents to a DARE office officer along with a sibling have been removed from the parents' home by social services. Police report that they are staying with relatives.
Boy, how many different ways can we express our disgust at this story? You know, DARE coming into classrooms to teach kids to narc out their parents. And surely, you know, they're out there telling them, oh, you got to take, I know you're scared, but you got to worry because your parents are involved with something really, really dangerous. And the kids, frightened for their mommy and daddy, you know, turn to this authority figure and they say, oh, well, mommy and daddy have been growing drugs. And that poor kid's thinking, okay, now everything will be all right. Now my parents will be fine. And little do they know that they're gonna have their parents taken away from them, locked up, imprisoned, possibly losing their jobs, unable to take care of their kids, and the kids have to go spend time with social services, with some foster family, when in all actuality, these are probably, you know, perfectly fine parents, good parents, taking care of their kids, who love their kids, who just made the simple mistake of not locking up their stash in their home. This is despicable. This is something that is worthy of Himmler and Goebbels and all the Nazi brown shirts that taught the Hitler youth to turn in their parents for not being good Germans. I can't believe that we have to keep telling this story in America, the land of the free. And what are we doing having cops come in to show kids drugs? One of our chatters up here said, put up a little point to DARE, introducing kids to drugs since 1984. I know so many people, who younger people and people my age, who have grown up saying the first time I ever saw weed was when a DARE cop showed it to me. These are 11-year-old kids we're talking about. And they go in there and they fill their mind full of lies about cannabis and scare the hell out of them. And they cause these families to be broken up and the kids to be separated. It's just disgusting. And even if it were something that were effective on keeping kids away from using drugs, it couldn't be anything that we would support, because these are health decisions. These are health issues that need to be discussed. The only danger the kids face from their parents growing marijuana in the house is the danger of cops coming in with a no-knock warrant in the middle of the night, lighting off flashbang grenades, shooting their pets, and terrifying them. That's the only thing they have to fear, is the cops, not the weed. Every time we do this story, I just cringe at the notion of DARE, that we'd bring cops in. I mean, we're talking about a public health issue. If you want to bring doctors in to talk about marijuana, I'm fine with that. How about bringing in some experts on marijuana as well? But no, we're going to bring kids in to fill their heads full of lies, to inculcate them in the notion that marijuana smokers are somehow dangerous druggies, and that they've got to turn their parents in lest they be subject to danger themselves. It's offensive in the utmost. And again, if it were effective, it would still be offensive. But as Carrie mentioned, it's not even effective. Numerous double-blind, peer-reviewed scientific studies have shown that DARE has no influence or even a negative influence with kids and their use of drugs. Just recently in the Prop 19 debate, I think it was the ONDCP, came out with the latest stats from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, saying the average age at which kids start marijuana has dropped from 17.8 years to 17 years. And they're trying to use that to scare us, to say, oh my God, there's a drug problem with the kids. You know what the problem problem is nobody's checking those kids' IDs. That's why we have for over two decades now had high school seniors telling us that 85 to 90% of them find marijuana easy or fairly easy to get a hold of. All of the problems with kids and marijuana in this society are directly attributable to the prohibition of marijuana. Let's start carding the kids. Let's like treating the adults like adults, and let's get some real education for them out there so they can make smart decisions. And there we have that. We're going to go on to something happier here, get our daily toker tunes up here, try to get ourselves back into our happy place. But if there's dare in your school, do something about it. Get rid of this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Percent of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
22 after, time to go back up to Grass Storia and Cannabis Carry. What do we got for Roots Monday today?
Well, today, if you like your blues to rock, you're going to love this song from Chicante, and you should go to his website and check out all of his music because they're really good. This is from his latest album, Sweet Northern California, and you can hear Chicante on vocals, harmonica, and guitar, and also features Maddie Cohen on guitar and vocals. Now, for you music files, he plays a harmonica with amazing skill, and he plays it through a vintage 1940s Vega amp and multiple customized and modified microphones, a customized tuner, and a modified JT-30. Did you get all that, Russ?
Sure did.
There's no place like California, and as the most populated state heads to the polls in a few weeks, all of the eyes of our cannabis community are fixated on this historic vote. So today's Toker Tune is sort of an anthem for Northern California. It's not actually about cannabis, but after I listened to the lyrics of this song a few times, it just felt so poignant as we head towards this vote. I really think you're going to love this song. Check out the harmonica playing from this guy. This is Chicante, and the song is his title track from his latest album, Sweet Northern California.
Yeah, Sweet Northern California. That's what I'm talking about. So the Redwood Highway, Green Mountains got a need to the blue sea by the bay. Ain't nothing gonna stop us, it's land of the free. No more troubles, no more worries, just be what you wanna be. Life of love in the Golden Gate, everything's gonna go our way. Time is on our side, no need to run, no need to hide. Everything that you want, it's waiting here for you. Show up and you'll find it. Show up and be true. Oh, girl. Oh,
California.
It's the land of the sun.
At the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Legalization. Decriminalization. Lowest law enforcement priority. Medical marijuana. Ganja sacrament. Consumer cannabis. Industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal show live, Cannabis Conversations.
Thank you, Steve. Hey, I'm really glad to be here moderating this panel for the guests on Prop 19 and the Prop 19 discussion. I'm from Portland, Oregon, so I don't exactly have a dog in the fight, so to speak. Other than the fact that I'm an American, I want to see prohibition end all across this great land. And it's not going to happen until somebody steps up and makes that first step. And that's going to be you lucky Californians out there. I'm so jealous. But as California goes, so goes the nation. 1996, California passed Prop 215. 2 years later, Alaska. Alaska, Oregon, and Washington followed in their footsteps. I'm crossing my fingers for 2012, baby, that Oregon will be right behind you. Well, let's get to this panel, first of all, because I'm thrilled about the luminaries we have joining us here today. First of all, immediately to my left, we have Todd McCormick, entrepreneur and activist behind the Hempire Expo, Hempire Media. Yeah, Jeff Jones, who's a executive director of Patient Aid Center, and also a spokesperson for the Prop 19 campaign. We have the Honorable Senator Mike Gravel from the great state of Alaska, who was also a Republican presidential candidate, who in my opinion was sorely and unfairly excluded from so many of those debates. We need your voice, sir. I'm glad you're here.
Builds up our prisons where we are the shame of the world. all of this because we don't know how to handle drugs. The intelligent polycat. I want to commend this organization for putting on this event. And I hope that Californians will vote for the Proposition 19 and put aside Eric Holder's statement that it would really enforce federal law. You need to have a confrontation to bring about beneficial results. And so I hope that California does a confrontation on the Obama administration in Washington, D.C. to help advance sanity in our hands in drugs. Thank you very much.
General Holder released a memo in response to 9 former DEA administrators who called him out, who basically said, oh, you're being quiet about this, you're not getting involved in trying to send the right message. And Attorney General Holder said that when California passes Prop 19, well, actually he said if, but when California passes Prop 19, that the federal government would still enforce the Controlled Substances Act and would continue to hold federal law supreme. What's your take on that and how California should respond to it?
Well, first of all, yes for Prop 19. I think that the potential here is that California, Prop 19 will be the domino nationwide to bring about rational drug policy nationwide. So I'm really excited about this. And by the way, even if it falls short, it still caused a collective head turn of the entire country to examine the drug issue. So this is positive. And you all know that it's going to happen, whether it happens this time or next time. But I'm optimistic that it happens this time. And let's say it fails this time, 51% to 49%. When 51% of the population says to 49% of the population, you belong behind bars for your activities, that is not good law. So it's my understanding that Eric Holder has said that he is going to enforce federal law. It's my understanding that when it came to the prohibition of alcohol, that what brought an end to the prohibition of alcohol was New York saying, look, we're not going to enforce federal law anymore. Federal government, you want to enforce federal law, you come in and enforce it. That, to my knowledge, was the domino that brought an end to the prohibition of alcohol. Voting yes on Proposition 19 will bring an end to the prohibition of marijuana, not only in California, but nationwide. And if the federal government wants to step in and do that, we'll just watch that utility play itself out.
When Prop 19 passes, you know, you work as a criminal defense attorney. When Prop 19 passes, how does your job change with respect to not only non-medical users of cannabis, but also medical users of cannabis? How does your job change as a criminal defense attorney? How does Prop 19 help or hurt you?
Well, most of my clients are going to law firm than 25 square feet. So, in terms of the letter of the law, not much, but in terms of the perception, a lot of district attorneys have told us that they believe it would be harder to get a jury trial conviction after Prop 19 until they put off some of our cases in some counties until after the election. And my way of thinking that they can kind of more politically get rid of some of the kind of a lot of cases that are going to provide those that because of Prop 19 there's going to be an advanced jury qualification. That's just in some areas, whereas in other areas like Los Angeles County even, DAs are continuously, I had to go to trial last month on a one-time medical case, I'll set the trial again, and they don't have a lot of the law problem actually. They're still willing to waste, I believe it's $10,000 a day to run a trial court to prosecute any cases with defenses. So, I don't know how much it really will change, unfortunately. I think in terms of the reality of this problem, what people experience is looking at law, just that people don't generally hire attorneys for less than half cases. That is what most of the arrests are for, about 60,000 arrests a year for misdemeanor marijuana crimes. And there are two misdemeanor crimes. There is possession of less than ounce and possession of more than ounce. And generally speaking, cops don't think we're following the rest of the sale and they'll kind of get a negotiation from the mouth. So that means to me that basically the greater arrest is less than half. So in terms of what people experience on the street, I think there will be a huge difference.
Okay, great. Let's second question now for David Gannonstock of High Times Magazine. For 35 years now, High Times has chronicled kind of the marijuana culture, and a lot of that being the underground marijuana culture. There's a lot of fear among small growers, people who've been living in the underground culture for a long time. And of course, normal at High Times, we share a genesis with marijuana smuggling. I mean, so when Prop 19 passes, how does this change the landscape? What can you say to those folks that are so enamored of the underground market, how they should react to this, or how they can deal with it?
Remember that. We're all in the same boat, and this movement has been getting its ass kicked for so long, we don't recognize that now we have something to gain. There's going to be different people with different viewpoints. And I think November 3rd, we're all going to be back in that same boat. And we need to keep that in mind. As far as for small-time growers, I think the thing about Prop 19 is local control. Local control means once Prop 19 passes at the local and county level. If you want to make sure that your job as a grower exists, get involved at the local level. Prop 19 is going to be whatever you can make it in your local area, and that's where you have the most interest. So for me, I want to see marijuana grown in a sustainable way that creates jobs for mom and pop, small business people. I want to see it grown in a way where money is flowing back into the community. That job begins November 3rd. And so that's my advice to everyone, and particularly, you know, we're a magazine for growers, and we can't dismiss their concern. And I don't think anybody can reasonably look at someone who's saying, hey, am I going to be able to feed my family like I can now, and say to that person, well, I do. We need to say to that person, we're with you. Going to be with you November 3rd, and the best way to affect change is at a local level. So vote on November 2nd and start working on your local government on November 3rd.
For Tom McCormick from Hempire Media, you're not just touring, you're working in the cannabis businesses, you know, aside from just the dispensary side, the exposition to all of the ancillary products that come from the cannabis industry. After Prop 19 passes, one of the things the opponents have been saying is, well, you're not really going to get that much tax revenue. It's not the $1.4 billion like Amiano's bill. It's all local. Can you address the economic concerns of Prop 19 and what this might mean for California's economy?
That's an excellent question, actually. You know, when people are talking about the economic impact of cannabis prohibition, they actually quote the Attorney General's office estimating it to be between a $10 and $14 billion a year industry. And when they say that, they are just talking about us people that are smoking cannabis. They're really not talking about the auxiliary industries that, like, make our rolling papers or the lighters we buy or the equipment that we use to grow the pot that we smoke or the water that we use or the fertilizers we buy or the gas that we put in our pickup trucks to drive to our grow plot. And all of this, when you start looking into it, is a massive financial impact on society, a very beneficial impact, because when growers make money, they spend it. And the reality is that Prop 19 is not necessarily going to hinder a grower's ability to put food on the table for their family. What it's going to do is going to give them opportunity now and in the future to be able to have a legitimate business where they do have to do some record keeping and they do have to have a little bit more sophistication in their operations, but that also means that they're never going to go to prison, that their children will never know what it's like to grow up without a dad because he's doing time for growing pot and remaining a criminal. And I think that's important, you know, I think we all want to not be criminals here. And it has really astounded me to listen to some of these people that are cannabis users talking about how we should, as a community, accept decriminalization. And if anything I tell you people today that I hope you listen to, it's this, that none of you people here deserve to be a criminal due to the behavior that you are exerting using cannabis. I believe that in my heart. And I believe that what Governor Fortier is trying to do with this little decriminalization before the election is try to convince Californians that it's okay to be criminals, and they're going to tax us in their own way, which is by fining us when they catch us. And that's wrong. And what we need to do is stand up for our rights right now. We need to get together on this, because when we win on 19, we all win on 19. And we send a message, not just to California, but to the rest of the world, that this paper wall of prohibition is over, and that we as a collective community are not the stupid stoners that they plan us out to be, but we are a sophisticated group of concerned citizens that are going to actually get together and make this world a better place. You know, I thank you all for being here today, because in all reality, you are making history. Cypress Hill has been pushing this for a long, long time, back when it wasn't so popular. Now, it's very popular. And the people that you are the reason it's popular. Because people are seeing what we're really like after a couple of decades of saying, wow, you people are really good. You're giving us environmental consciousness. You're giving us a concern for our fellow citizens that we don't see in an alcohol culture. We don't see in a tobacco culture. We are a very important part of this society. Cannabis is not just going to physically impact California by you people paying taxes on the pot you smoke. It's going to be when you're growing and you're wearing hemp t-shirts and hemp clothes and you got hemp paper and you don't have to buy fuel from 9,000 miles away from your car. It can be grown by your neighbor next door. You know, this is the type of economic impact they're not talking about right now. And this is going to happen with Prop 19. Prop 19, is all, a lot of people aren't talking about it, is going to allow the cultivation of cannabis hemp for industrial use. Yes. And if any of you people here have ever read The Emperor Wears No Clothes, if you haven't, I urge you to. I am sadly the editor of this great book now that Jack Herer passed away, and I just released the 12th edition in his honor. And I urge you to go out and get it. But I've long held that the real reason why cannabis marijuana prohibition is existing is to protect big industry and the synthetic solutions that they handed us 80, 90 years ago, which have not worked. And of course, medical marijuana is competing with the pharmaceutical industry, we realize that. But it is also quietly a competitor of the tree industry that makes paper, the fuel industry that is fueling our cars, and is the reason we're in places like Iraq with unjust wars. It is a massive opportunity for the nutraceutical business that can get in and start letting us as humans consume hemp seed as a nutritional resource that maybe might mean if we got healthy on a vitamins and minerals and a complete protein kind of way, that we wouldn't collectively need as much medical marijuana as we need to consume in today's society, because we all won't be as sick. So I could go on and on, but thank you very much. It is a real pleasure to be on this panel. Thank you all for coming out today.
Thank you, Bob. Yes. For our next question, we're with Jeff Jones from Yes on 19. Here we are at the Cypress Hill Smokeout. I was here last year as well. It's an amazing event. Everywhere I go, I see beautiful young people. I see cannabis smoke. Prop 19 has some things in it about people that are between 18 and 20 years old. It has some language in it about not smoking in public or not smoking when minors are present. When Prop 19 passes, can we still have the Cypress Hill Smokeout?
Sure. If this is a private event, you actually transfer that right as you pass through the admission district. So, I mean, there are all sorts of things. If you see what the medical marijuana meetings are out there, those used to be just beer gardens. And now we've changed that. We took out our option off of what's out there and made it what we wanted it to be. And that can exactly happen with the world of peace. And sure, there's some things in Prop 19 that I don't support. You know, that I didn't want to put in there. But it wouldn't pass without some of that in there. If we left out some of the important things about dealing with kids. And there's an important thing that we don't think about when the 18 to 20-year-old issue gets tossed around. One person earlier said they were creating a felony out of somebody who's 18 to 20. That's not true. We're not. We're creating a misdemeanor, I guess. But what we are doing is downgrading a felony position for anybody that's 20 to 18 who grows cannabis in California, because that's now going to be a misdemeanor. Currently, right now, anybody in this whole arena that plants one seed that doesn't have a medical cannabis recommendation or isn't a caregiver for one that has one is a felon under the eyes of the law. And we're going to change that November 2nd. November 3rd, when you wake up, you're not going to be a felon anymore if you plant a seed. You're not going to be a felon anymore if you choose to grow your own in your home.
Yeah.
A simple analogy, this is kicking the can of cannabis reform down the street. And while we may not like everything in it, we're all going to get a chance to make it better once we get this passed. We shouldn't bicker about whether or not to pass this. We should bicker about what's the details after we get done passing this.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring this to our two former elected officials, both to Senator Bell and to Governor Johnson. When I was growing up, Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980, and I remember on my TV telling me that the effect of smoking one marijuana cigarette was equal to being on Bikini Island during an H-bomb blast. I remember Willis from Different Strokes, Nancy Reagan, Just Say No. In 87, 89, I think the exact year, Judge Ginsburg lost the Supreme Court nomination just because he admitted he smoked pot at Harvard. And then, of course, Bill Clinton famously didn't inhale, and while Barack Obama says that he inhaled frequently, that is the point. When we bring up legalization, we laugh at us. So as people who have worked in Washington or in a state house, we'll start with Senator Gravel. When are the politicians finally going to get to the place we are on this issue? Because it seems like the American people are far more ready to talk about this than either of the two mainstream parties.
When the majority of people act, politicians have a great talent of putting their finger in the air and finding out which way the wind's blowing, or watching where the crowd's going so they can run to the head of the crowd, otherwise they wouldn't be our leaders. So let me point out to you that, as the governor said earlier, California is the most progressive state in the United States. Make no mistake about that. But by passing this, regardless of what Holder does, and the way Holder put out his statement, it's like he's hiding behind the door and yelling out there, we're going to enforce the law. It wasn't a real outburst. And that's because many in the Obama administration are political cowards. And unfortunately, on this issue, it's self-evident. I was in the debate at Howard University. And of the nine presidential candidates, I was the only one that brought up the fact that our policy on marijuana and drugs is the scourge of the inner city. And I won that debate. And it's because they took a poll after from the student body, and I won that debate. And so I can only attribute it to the fact that it was the marijuana issue that I came down very hard on and was trying to admonish the other politicians for hiding under the table. I don't know why they're hiding under the table. The polls overwhelmingly show that the people are mature enough to handle, one, easily marijuana, and also to handle the deregulation of all drugs. Keep in mind, our drug problem is not a criminal problem, it's a public health problem. And we need to treat it that way.
There is a total disconnect between what the public thinks and politicians. Take the entire universe of politicians, 0% of politicians support this issue, and yet 40-45% of the population of the United States supports legalizing marijuana. So nowhere in public policy is there that kind of disconnect, except for our drug policy. So, really, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results? That's what we've got right now. From my own personal experience, I don't drink, I don't smoke pot, but I've drank and I've smoked pot. And I will tell you that there is a huge difference between marijuana and alcohol. And that huge difference is that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. So, vote yes on Prop.
For the next question, I'll send this one to both Todd and to David. I want to talk about music and celebrity. We talked about Washington and their support for this issue, but we've got a lot of musicians and celebrities who support this issue globally.
some of them. And yet, you know, when California was dealing with Prop 8, we saw Funny or Die videos, we saw concerts to raise money to help with, you know, no on Prop 8. Here with Prop 19, it seems like, from other than, you know, Cypress Hill maybe, musicians and celebrities have been quiet on the issue, so.
Yeah, I was on a panel in Burlington, Vermont a year ago, and the group that was most outstanding in having collected data on the subject was the Police Officers Association of America. I'm just wondering, are they weighing in on this Prop 8, Prop 19? Because they made an awesome presentation, and their organization is nationwide. So when you see some police types saying, oh, we've got to keep the regulations on, the major law enforcement organizations of the nation are for the deregulation of marijuana and drugs.
Thank you, Senator. Continue the question from Todd and David as far as celebrity fundraising support, visible support, musician support. How can we get more of that? Why do you not have it?
Well, you know, I will say I've been lobbying a lot of my famous friends. I was fortunate enough when I got arrested to be bailed out of jail by Woody Harrelson, and I defended myself in federal court with Larry Flint's attorneys. And I've had the good fortune of having some very caring, famous friends for quite a while, and I will be blunt when I say a lot of them are actually very concerned, guys like Woody, that them coming out strongly for us right now can actually hurt us, because they feel like, especially Bill mentioned, that he feels like he's a polarizing individual, and he doesn't want to give the people coming against us anything else to come against us with. And a lot of the people like Woody, for instance, who's been well known as a hemp advocate for a couple decades now practically, feels that in a sense their work not is done, but they've put their two cents into the conversation, and now before the election, if people come out and start coming out against them because of their celebrity, for whatever reason they're hating on them, they don't want that to bleed into Prop 19 and the fact that we're winning. And a lot of us, the Bill Maher's and Woody Harrelson stuff, feel that this is an issue that has already been won in society. And here we are, nobody's making any big donations. If you go and you look up where the money's come from for this initiative that Jeff Jones and Richard Lee, I mean, have been putting on by themselves, you realize that no one really has come up with this money, and we're still winning. And that shows that it's been the due diligence of people like Jack Herrick and activists before us that have really pushed this issue. And this is why this issue is so well understood now, and this is why we're winning. So reality is that we're the celebrities. Cannabis is the celebrity, and that's who we need to support right now.
Legalization, we find a lot of them love high times right until they come to their management. And they're in what we call the entertainment industrial complex. And they have people around them saying, hey, it might feel really good for you for 5 minutes to tell the truth, but you're going to lose soccer moms in the Midwest and your next movie is this and that. And so my only point with that is that we really need to recognize that the people that come forward who have a public to lose, they deserve our respect for that. Certainly politicians who do that deserve a great deal of respect, and so do our entertainers who are willing to stand with us, because they're being told not to.
You mean to tell me that these entertainers are acting just like politicians in Washington?
No offense to them, but they say politics and show business forever.
Great stuff from the Cypress Hill Smokeout. That was the first half hour of our Prop 19 panel. Sorry about the audio quality on that. I'm trying to get that fixed, but I wasn't allowed to use the main feed, so I couldn't get you the sound that I wanted to. We'll try to clean that up for tomorrow, part two on our Tuesday show with all those great panelists. First time I ever got to talk to a senator and a governor at the same time. Stay tuned for hour two. We're back with more of the Cypress Hill Smokeout and your calls. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Yeah.